Welcome to Mill Liberty, the voice of liberty for a new generation.
All right, Joe Walsh,
Matt Kibbe,
John Stossel, welcome to Mill Liberty.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
Hey, Caleb, I mean this. It's great to be with you. Thank you for the invite.
This week, we are going to be going over the myths and realities that surround monopolies. Teddy Roosevelt hated small government. The gateway into space will help alleviate a lot of this problem.
It was a fateful error we took 100 years ago with this kind of monopolization of banking and centralization of money and credit.
Automation, streamlined productivity, and cost effectiveness.
There's two big government parties, and one of them is red and one of them is blue.
We are creating a community of liberty lovers. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. Alrighty, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the new and improved Liberty Podcast. I am your host, Caleb Franz. By the way, I do hope that you enjoyed that new little intro that we have there. It's the same general music with some added layers to it. So, I hope you certainly caught some of the interviews that you may have heard in the past, because I sprinkled a little bit of some of our past programming throughout that intro. So hope you liked it. That's going to be the intro in the foreseeable future for all of our episodes in the foreseeable future. This is the first episode of, like I said, our new restructured programming. And the way this is going to work, in case you weren't around for the past couple episodes or so, which I highly suggest that you go back and listen to, because those are some pretty good episodes. The way this is going to work is that this right now is going to be essentially the intro where I set up the program, and then eventually, whenever we have begun selling ads for the programming, so that way I can devote as much time to this program as possible to make the best content that I can. So with that being said, if you are someone who might want to advertise on the program, or if you know someone who might want to advertise on the program, whether they be a business, whether they be hosting an event, those are all kinds of ads, whether they would like to sponsor an entire episode, all of those. I won't go into too much detail here, but all of those type of ads we have to sell. So please either come my way or send someone else my way that you might know who might be interested in that, because we would love to start that conversation and see where that can lead up. I will be somewhat, I guess, I will be using extreme vetting, so to speak, to use a Trump terminology there. However, you know, as long as they suit our values and we can suit theirs, then I think we're in a very good place to move forward in a business capacity. So that's what this space is essentially going to be for in the near future. What we're going to be doing next will be the monologue of the program that will be focused on the theme of the episode and the theme specifically of the interview that follows this. And then we will have another ad section in the middle. We don't have any ads on this particular program currently, on this particular episode, but just in the future, know that that's sort of the way that that's going to be structured. And then we will dive into the interview, which will be the longest and hopefully most interesting portion of the programming. And then I will give some of my closing thoughts, and we'll have a few closing ads once we get to that capacity as well. And then that will be the end of the program. So it's going to be broken up a lot easier for me. For me, it's going to have a lot less, I guess, not really stress, because the program itself was never really stressful, but it's going to remove a lot of weight on my shoulders to push out a lot of heavy content all at once and try to provide for you like an hour-long program or a 40-minute-long program all at once. This can break the program down into digestible bits on my standpoint. And then for your standpoint, it's also easier to sort of keep your attention span whenever it's sort of broken up into digestible parts as well. But also, it will allow me to focus my thoughts into a much shorter time frame. So instead of me rambling on, it will force me to hone in on those thoughts. So you don't have to hear me ramble on for 40 minutes. And also, I'm going to have the chance and the opportunity to bring to you a lot more guests, a lot more influencers and movers and shakers and the Liberty Movement. And, you know, depending on how far this goes, we might be bringing on a couple guests at a time and doing panels like we once did. That never really took off in the early days, but it certainly can now with the new format and the new structure, and maybe even some debates if that time and that demand is there for a style of programming such as that. So there's a lot to look forward to here. I have a lot of guests line up already. I have a lot of guests in my mind that I am going to reach out to that I have no doubt that they'll be saying yes. But today, we actually have a returning guest, and it's going to be a guest that is a good friend of mine, someone who I have had the pleasure of getting to know. This individual was one of the first individuals that I met within the political space and the political realm, the Liberty Movement, and that is Matt Kibbe. Matt Kibbe is the president of Free the People. Free the People is a nonprofit organization that is a fantastic group. They really focus on storytelling. They really focus on trying to communicate these ideas, much like what we do here on both the Maliberty podcast as well as the Maliberty initiative for our organization and for organizational purposes. And Matt and I have a really great conversation. We'll be getting into that in a little bit. But for the opening monologue, I want to touch on something that we do kind of highlight in this program, in my interview with Matt a little bit. And by the way, I hope you noticed some of the clips that I had with Matt Kibbe in the intro music is actually clips that I pulled from this interview. So that way it's layered with both the old and the new. But with that being said, I do want to touch on something that we touched on during this interview, and you'll hear more me and Matt talk about it, but this is something that I figured I would do our monologue on today because it is Independence Day, and because everyone is going out, and I should say it is Independence Day when you listen to this, because obviously I'm not recording this on Independence Day. I will be on vacation on that time. And I hope you are too. I hope you just happen to be listening to this while you're on vacation, or maybe whenever you get back. So when I sat down with Matt and I chatted with him, we talked about a little bit about the idea of patriotism, and specifically with regard to flag burning. And the reason this was brought up is because recently, President Trump tweeted out, and let me pull this up real quick, and I'll read this off to you. On June 15th, President Trump tweeted out about how he was in favor of banning flag burning, burning the American flag, that is to say. And he said, all in for Senator Steve, and you have to forgive me, I'm not really familiar with this senator, so I'm probably going to butcher his last name. But Steve Daines, as he proposes an amendment for a strong ban on burning our American flag, a no-brainer. No, Mr. President, that's not a no-brainer, and a lot of conservatives seem to be, well, at least a lot of more tribalistic type of conservatives seem to be backing this idea, because obviously burning the American flag is unpatriotic and it's anti-American. And the only way to combat that is to just ban it, which I can't think of anything that is more of a slap in the face to the ideas and to the values that the American flag, especially on this day, especially on Independence Day, when we're supposed to be remembering the ideas that birthed this nation, when we're supposed to be remembering the notion that patriotism is not about a country per se. It's not about sticking behind a piece of cloth or a piece of fabric. It's about defending those ideas that define that country. And it just so happens that in America, those ideas are the ideas that we here on this program tout every single episode. The ideas of individualism, the ideas of freedom of thought, the ideas of freedom of expression, the ideas that you have a right to defend your own life, the ideas of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, the ideas of freedom of speech and private property. Those are all ideas that encompass what it means to be an American. Now, in other countries, patriotism is not necessarily a universal definition. So in other countries, patriotism might mean something a little bit differently. But here in America, it's founded on the ideas that was enshrined in the Constitution and in the Declaration of Independence, especially in the Declaration of Independence. And the idea that the president seems to think that banning this form of speech and banning what you can or cannot do, legislating what you can and cannot do with your own form, with your own private property, is appalling to me. As an American, as someone who considers himself to be a patriot, not to be confused with a nationalist, because in some countries, they kind of blend together. In America, there are two very different distinctions. And I think the president gets this mixed up. I think people like Candace Owens, who tweeted out that that you should have your citizenship revoked because you burn the American flag. Once you start prohibiting this kind of speech, regardless of whether or not you agree with it or not, I personally would never burn an American flag outside of, like, a retirement setting. If you're not familiar with that, you can burn an American flag if you retire it properly. And that's something that I did very frequently. I was in Scouts as a younger kid, so I've done many of those in my past. I have a lot of patriotism in my blood because of things like that. It is appalling to me that someone would want to ban, regardless of how patriotic I am. I would much rather see every single flag in the United States be burned to ashes than I would ever want to see. I should say voluntarily, by the way, not if the government was to round them up and start burning them. I would much rather see every single citizen in the United States take their American flag and torch it. As much as that would just break my heart to watch, I would much rather see that than to see the government take the First Amendment to the United States Constitution and burn it. The flag of the United States of America is supposed to represent a collaboration of ideas centered around the ideas of freedom and liberty and justice for everyone all across the land, regardless of who they are, so long as it's under their jurisdiction. That means that flag burning is protected speech. Now, I'm not worried necessarily that this is going to happen, or even if it does happen, I'm not worried that it would be upheld by the Supreme Court. I think that that would be very much struck down by the Supreme Court because, first of all, the Supreme Court is actually pretty good on, especially on speech issues. I know there's a lot of, you know, back and forth about, you know, how good is the Supreme Court for individual liberty, especially now, especially with people like Gorsuch on the bench, which would be hilarious if Trump signed something like this into law and it was struck down by Neil Gorsuch. But the idea that that the Supreme Court would uphold this, I think, is kind of foolish. So it likely wouldn't even happen. But that's kind of beside the point. That's not the point here that I'm making. The point here that I'm making is that there are people who profess themselves to be patriots who are actually only, well, first of all, they're virtue signaling. They're trying to signal that they're the most patriotic. They're the ones who care about their country the most. Whether or not you care about a piece of cloth, whether or not you support the wars or not, whether or not you back the blue, so to speak, that doesn't define a patriot. A patriot is defined by who supports liberty, even when it's at its most crucial stage, even when it's the most difficult time to support it, even when it's so popular, especially within your own base, when it's so popular to say one thing and you go out and say something else because you know it to be true. That is what true patriotism is. And that is what I want you to keep in mind this Independence Day and every day that follows it. Patriotism has nothing to do about whether or not you burn a flag or not. Patriotism has everything to do about whether or not you burn the Constitution, whether or not you burn the liberties that it is supposed to protect. That should be your definition of patriotism on this Independence Day. So, with that being said, like I said, at this point of time, we would typically go into a ad section, but we don't have that right now, so we're just going to go straight into our interview. If you enjoy this episode, and I'll kind of circle back with this at the end of the episode, but if you enjoy this episode, please, please, please be sure to go out, share this with your friends. Tell them to subscribe to Milliberty, because that is going to help us in the future. It's going to help us get advertisers. It's going to help us. It's going to help us expand as a network. It's going to help us build our nonprofit. It's going to help everyone sort of get the updates and the news as far as what we're trying to do and what we're trying to build as quickly as possible. If you will, this kind of serves as an ad in and of itself for the network and for the organization. So please, please, please go out, share this program with your friends, with your family, regardless of their political beliefs, because we're trying to build that network and that community of liberty lovers, regardless of where they are currently. We're trying to meet them where they are, not where they would like or where we would like them to be. So please go out and share this. Please go out and subscribe. Give us a 5-star rating, if you will. It really helps out. And without further ado, please sit back and enjoy my interview with Matt Kibbe. All right, Matt, welcome back to the program. I am thrilled to have you here. It's good to have you back.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
So it's been a little bit since I've had you on the program. I think it was 2017, so quite a bit of time has passed. Why don't you bring everyone up to speed about what you've been up to over the past year or two, and we'll kind of go from there.
Yeah, 2017 seems like a lifetime ago. And, you know, both in our politics and in our culture, there's this weird resurgence in young people's love affair with socialism. And I've fixated a lot on that, as I think anyone that loves liberty should. And there's, you know, there's good news and bad news. Free the People has spent almost all of our time trying to communicate to that young audience that is still searching. They're trying to figure out who they are. And, you know, they're being presented with these essentially two awful choices. And, you know, Antifa sets this up just perfectly. Either you're a socialist or a communist, as Antifa's roots are rooted in, or you can be a fascist. And I reject the idea that anyone has to choose between those two rancid ideologies. And instead, you're seeing a trend where young people are registering as independents and they're curating ideas a la carte. And that was sort of the chaos and the paradigm shift that Free the People wanted to get into starting in 2015. Today, what we're doing is a lot of focus on language and storytelling, and we can get into this as we have our conversation.
Sure.
But, you know, the idea is that young people consume video content and they're not relying on any team, the red team or the blue team or the Marxist professor or the TV news anchor, to dictate the terms of that conversation. They're doing it for themselves. And I think that is the libertarian opportunity. Everyone said that 2016 was, this is getting upstream of politics into the culture.
Mm-hmm. So you're on The Blaze now, and obviously that's been going fairly well, and you've brought on a lot of different types of guests. How has that been going over so far, and who might be someone who you have been pleasantly surprised to have on that you might not have thought initially would have been as good of an interview for you as what you might have initially thought?
Well, I'll plug this week's show. This week, I talked to George Will, who for people of my generation, not to sound like the old man in the conversation, but for people of my generation, George Will was that sometimes lonely voice in mainstream media for constitutional conservatism. He calls it a conservative sensibility, but particularly in the era of Trump, he's sounding a lot like what I am, a Hayekian libertarian that has deep respect for institutions, but I still believe that each individual with our hopes and dreams, we own ourselves. And interestingly enough, there's very little difference between George Will circa 2019 and libertarians. You know, he's most famous for having left the Republican Party because of Trump. But what I like about this book and what I like about the conversation that we had is that Trump did not occupy our minds. He did not crowd out a conversation about ideas. So getting George Will on my show, Kibbe on Liberty, was kind of a bucket list event for me. But we also have had just a tremendous number of guests. Eric July, who's this anarcho-capitalist Christian libertarian hip-hop artist, he was on. And that actually was one of our better performing shows. Justin Amash and I geeked out on Austrian economics and classical liberal philosophy. And Dave Rubin was on, and we mostly talked about Star Wars, which probably was pretty cool for you.
Right. Yeah. Well, some of the nerdier things is obviously going to be a big win on my camp and anyone probably listening to this program as well. So, and I did listen to that one. I appreciated all the prequel love on that one, having grown up on it. So that one was a lot of fun.
Somebody has to defend it.
Someone has to, you know, and I feel like, you know, as every new thing comes along, and this is especially the case with Star Wars, but with every new sort of era that comes along, the previous era seems to tend to look back, be looked back upon a little bit more fondly each time. So, you know, maybe in 10 years, the same thing will happen with the sequel era, who knows. But getting back into this, I do want to touch on a few things within politics, and somewhat keeping that to a limited perspective, but I kind of want to
hit on the right a little bit, and this is something that you might have a little bit of fun sort of bashing on them with me a little bit, because they've been a little bit authoritarian as of late. I don't know if you've noticed this, but there's been a lot of talks of banning flag burning and raising the smoking age, and a lot of stuff that just makes me cringe when I hear people who talk about loving limited government and then supporting this kind of stuff. So can you tell me, you know, just what the hell is going on here?
Well, I think there's two big government parties, and one of them is red and one of them is blue. And in a lot of ways, they're competing to sort of decide who is who in terms of using the power of not just the executive branch, but the power of Congress to dictate things. That the banning on smoking makes me laugh, because it's really, every time I feel like I click on a video on YouTube now, it's Altria telling me that it's time to raise the smoking age to 21. And of course, what they're doing is entrenching their de facto monopoly and crowding out competition, because, you know, every time they endorse more regulation and more labeling and all the things that they've been doing since the settlement, what was that, the early 2000s, I think it was. It's cynical corporate strategy designed to do that. But, you know, I love the fact that you can die in a war, and you can drive a car, and you can have children, and you can vote. You know, Nancy Pelosi wants young people to vote at 16, but we're not going to be allowed to smoke until we're 21.
Right.
And I had this conversation with Andrew Heaton. I feel like if the age of political consent should be 16 years old, surely smoking is okay, whatever the age is when we become adults. And I think we could argue about that, but it should be the same. And I just, it's a joke, right?
Right. Yeah. And it seems to be that a lot of people sort of pushing for this and supporting this. It seems to be that they want to sort of have their cake and eat it too. They want to raise the limit for all the leisure activities, all the stuff, like whether it be drinking, whether it be smoking. But then when it comes to the nitty gritty, when it comes to the responsibility, that they want to keep at, you know, at 18 or however old, because, you know, that is obviously voting bases. That's obviously keeping the military healthy and young, and there's a lot of things that's beneficial for young people for the state. But then whenever it comes to just having, you know, some of the basic rights that come with adulthood, not just responsibility, then that's, you know, something that they want to back off from.
Yeah, and it's I think it runs counter to the new middle in politics. And I hate to use the left, right, and middle, but it's the closest thing I can make sense of anything. I do think that the vast majority of us are turned off by tribal politics, and we're turned off by the nanny state, and we're turned off by political correctness. And I think that young people are capable of making decisions for themselves, particularly, you know, 18 plus. I mean, this used to be a consensus, but not anymore. But I think that's a winner for libertarians. And you don't have to be pro-smoking, and you don't have to be pro any vice to suggest that Mitch McConnell is not necessarily the arbiter of good behavior or virtue. And I wouldn't look to any politician to tell me what the right thing to do is.
So there's, and this is something I've heard somewhat frequently, in support of this, or maybe not in support of this, but just the notion that, you know, fighting a battle for supporting the rights for 18 to 21 year olds to smoke is not the battle that we should be fighting. What would you say to something like that?
You know, I think there's a lot of battles, and it's not my first priority. I mean, I think that, you know, right now the government feeds off of tobacco taxes, both at the state and federal level. And in some ways, I'd almost rather call their bluff and say, if you really feel this way, why don't we just ban it altogether and let the black market take care of the provision of tobacco? And the government, of course, would never do this because they're more addicted to tobacco taxes than any individual is to actually smoking tobacco. But it gets into this broader bucket of the freedom to make your own choices in life. And that's one of those choices that you're going to have to make. You're going to have to decide whether or not, as we legalize marijuana, whether or not that's a choice you want to make. You're going to have to decide whether or not to get married. You're going to have to decide all of these things that used to be the space where civil society and families and individual choice reigned. But it seems like we want to dictate all those things. So I would frame it more broadly because I don't smoke and I don't really have any desire to smoke, but the idea that the federal government has an opinion on this is just offensive to me.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is, whenever this airs, this is going to be on the 4th of July, actually. And as I sort of alluded to a little bit earlier, the other thing that has been increasingly authoritarian within the GOP, or not really increasingly, it sort of has this resurgence every couple of years, this notion that we should ban flag burning. And that's something that's very popular right now. I believe there was a state rep or a senator that suggested that they were going to introduce a bill, or I forget what Trump tweeted about it, but he essentially, you know, tweeted in favor of it. So why is it that Republicans can't seem to get it through their head that the idea that banning freedom of speech is inherently less patriotic than protecting a flag, regardless of what that flag may represent?
I don't know. You know, there's the confusion and frankly simple-mindedness of some so-called conservatives that have embraced banning flag burning, and even Candace Owens went so far as to say that we should kick people out of the country for
it. Them, yeah.
Yeah, which seems a little crazy to me, but and I wonder. I almost tweeted back, but I try not to let Trump occupy my brain because that's kind of what he's doing here. But I almost tweeted and said, "Well, how do you feel about drawing images of the Prophet Muhammad? Is that protected speech, or is that something that should be banned as well?" And it sort of falls into the same category in my mind. Either free speech is a thing, or it's not, and once we allow political partisans and tribes to decide what is acceptable and what is not, we've basically burned the Constitution, not the flag, and that to me is a more fundamental thing. But I do think that a lot of this is Trump and conservatives sort of virtue signaling to their tribe leading up to the next election. And it does. It does a great job of distracting Democrats from their own narrative, and maybe that's what this is all about. You never know with these guys, right? It's mysterious. But if you're a civil libertarian, you should be offended by this stuff and make the case for free speech, even the stuff that triggers you, because that's the free speech that matters the most.
Right, and you know, you sort of bring up the Prophet Muhammad thing. My mind immediately went back to the Charlie Hebdo. Was that his name in Paris?
Yeah.
Back I think in 2015 when that happened, and how many times did we hear conservatives actually make the argument that yes, a free speech. Includes offensive speech and sometimes really abhorrent speech, but that's sort of the purpose of free speech, is that if you can't take down the worst speech possible, then that means your speech, because virtually everything else is covered underneath that, then you're probably going to be safe from the government if they can't even take down the worst type of speech possible.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny you bring that up. And by the way, Matt Welsh at Reason, you know, wrote some of the most definitive articles on the subject of Charlie Hebdo and free speech. But More recently, Mark Zuckerberg, when he called for creating a government process of determining what was acceptable and not acceptable speech on social media, actually referenced the French model. And what's sort of sick and twisted about that is that the free speech people writing at Charlie Hebdo had just endless problems with the federal government in France that were already dictating the terms of conversation. It is the most authoritarian model, and any time that Republicans and Democrats and corporate leaders and important guys like Mark Zuckerberg want to emulate the French authoritarian model, you got to worry about the future of this country.
Right. Yeah. So speaking of the French, I guess we can sort of start to bash the left a little bit now that you, I guess, have already brought that up. So what is your experience with interacting, because you try to go out of your way to go out and speak to young people on both sides of the political spectrum, if you want to use the sort of left-right paradigm there. What has been your experience when speaking with young people about how they think the way they think about government and socialism and things like that? And is there any sort of revelation moment whenever you speak with anyone of the left that maybe this idea that government is the solution to the problem that is government helping out the corporations and things like that, maybe that doesn't translate very well?
So I first of all, I'm very optimistic about the making the libertarian case to young people, and the evidence that I see sort of backs that up. And I talk a lot about, I've spent a lot of time sort of analyzing and dissecting the language that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez uses. And she, of course, is a millennial, and she's a democratic socialist. And the way that she sells it to her audience, which is massive on social media, sounds a lot like this. I believe in people working together from the bottom up at the community level, in voluntary cooperation to solve problems, because Washington, D.C. doesn't care about us. And most of the representation in Washington, D.C. is in bed with corporate America and crony capitalists. And that's why we need to do this for ourselves. Now, then she goes on to say, that's also why we need free college and free healthcare and free this and free that and free the other. But the basis of her argument is really fundamentally libertarian, because everything I just described is exactly what we believe. The reason we don't like top-down, one-size-fits-all government is that it undermines that process by which people and communities come together and solve problems and create beautiful new things that none of us could have imagined. So that's, I think, one of the reasons for the caveat, the democratic part of democratic socialism, is they're really trying to have it both ways. They want all these top-down programs, but the future they envision is really decentralized and bottom-up. And I think that's the part more than the free stuff that's attractive to young people, and that's the place where we could have more impact if we learned a little bit more about communicating and storytelling, and not assuming that the rest of the world consumes sort of economics and facts and supply and demand and downward sloping demand curves and all this stuff that we love to talk about. Normal people don't consume information that way. They consume based on emotions and values, and I think we have both a values-based and emotionally compelling story to tell if we're willing to do it.
You mean to tell me that the average person doesn't know who Ludwig von Mises is?
It's shocking and disappointing, but it is absolutely true.
That is absolutely crazy to me. I just found that out. So what's been the most challenging aspect on storytelling from your perspective and your experiences what has been the thing that maybe you thought would be a sure win and you know, people would really understand your perspective on this issue that's actually been somewhat of a challenge to try to communicate to people on different sides of the aisle, both, or I should say, either the left or the right side of the spectrum?
You know, it might actually be a little bit harder to communicate with conservatives today than it is certainly with independents, independent young people. And that's because of the growth in tribalism. And, you know, read your Twitter feed sometime if you have the audacity to criticize a Trump executive order, and everybody has sort of forgotten that we used to analyze presidents and members of Congress based on voting records and policies and statements. But now it's just, you know, if he says it, it's true. And if you oppose something that the truthsayer says, you're a rhino, you're a Democrat, you're a socialist, you know, fill in the blank. That is very frustrating to me. But, you know, going back to Kibbe on Liberty, the bigger challenge we have is that social media is dominated by clickbait, and particularly angry clickbait. And it's both sides do it. AOC does it, and Donald Trump is sort of the Jedi master of trolling on Twitter. But if you want to tell a compelling emotional story, you have to step back and calm down a little bit and engage people that are looking for that conversation. That's what Kibbe on Liberty is designed to do. But if you look at my content relative to your typical conservative fare, it's fundamentally different, because we don't spend much time making fun of the other side. We try not to make fun of anybody. We try to take all ideas seriously, but we also try to hold everybody to the same standard. And that used to be a thing that constitutional conservatives respected. That's how we elected guys like Rand Paul and Mike Lee and Thomas Massie and Justin Amash. It's not so clear anymore. Those guys, who are all quite different in their approach in the Trump era, they're outliers, because they're willing to call balls and strikes, regardless of who the president is. And, you know, every time, no matter what they say, if they criticize Trump, certain people go bananas.
What issue would you say, because I have my own sort of, I guess, theory or idea about this, but for me, the issue that I think has benefited the most from individuals telling their stories and sort of getting their perspectives out there in the way that maybe data and statistics and things like that just does not penetrate in the same way, is probably with the marijuana debate, and certainly with medical cannabis, but now even expanding into recreational as well. Would you say that has sort of seen the most benefit from a libertarian's perspective, of people telling stories and showing their humanity with one another? Or is there perhaps a different issue that you know, immediately come to mind with?
It's definitely one of the issues we've focused on a lot, particularly medical cannabis. And you get some very emotionally compelling stories of patients who tried everything else. They tried all the opioids, painkillers, and they tried all the doctor's prescribed remedies and the legal stuff. And when they ran out of hope, they decided, usually illegally, to try medical cannabis. And they're all of these amazing personal stories that we've been able to document, showing what happens when people are free to choose. And, you know, on one level, medical cannabis is sort of one of those transpartisan issues that has support across the political spectrum, both a growing number of Republicans, certainly a lot of Democrats and independents support the idea that people should be allowed to make this choice. But when push comes to shove, it's really a story about patients and doctors trying to make the right choice and being stopped by some faceless government bureaucrat that has decided for them that they can't make that choice. And that might be sort of a gateway drug, if you will, to a broader conversation about healthcare policy and why it's always dangerous to give faceless bureaucrats control over your healthcare choices.
So looking forward, with I guess this can be sort of a two-prong question here. My first question here would be looking forward into the future with regard to politics, with regard to the election cycle, because obviously that's going to be a big mess. But is there anything optimistic or anything exciting on the horizon that you're particularly excited for or optimistic about?
Well, I guess it would be hard to be immediately excited about politics right now, and I've tried my hardest to get upstream of politics as much as I can, but there is still it's absolutely going to happen. It's just a question of when and why. There's this moment where the two-party duopoly is in fact going to give away to alternative choices. And it's the internet and technology have done this to every industry except for politics. And that's in large part because the two parties write the terms and the rules of the game. And every time, you know, some potential rival starts knocking on the door, they just change the rules again. They raise the bar for Gary Johnson to get on the presidential stage in a way that was unrecognizable when Ross Perot managed to be that third party on the stage in the early 1990s. That's going to happen, and I think third party candidates should keep banging away at that because again, young people register as independents, and it's not because they want like half of right wing nationalism and half of left wing Marxism. It's because they don't buy any of that stuff, and they're looking for something else. But the problem is that the two parties aren't doing a very good job of offering those alternatives. And the broader point, and I may have made this point on your show last time, I think all of this chaos, starting with Howard Dean and Ron Paul, certainly the Tea Party movement, which I know a little bit about, but then Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, these are all things that didn't used to happen. And the reason they are happening is because technology is democratizing politics and knowledge and choices. And it turns out that for all the silos that the left wants to create, there aren't nearly enough silos to sort of categorize us. We certainly don't fit in two silos, but we probably don't fit in the matrix of intersectionality either. We're all different. We all have different choices and goals and dreams and parents and places where our ancestors came from. And the beautiful thing about America is that there was always a platform where we could all be ourselves, provided that the federal government was limited and not dictating choices and lifestyles and all the things that they're trying to do today. That is the future. And I feel like small L libertarianism, classical liberalism, constitutional conservatism, whatever you want to call that, that is the only platform that would allow for this insanely diverse community we call America to actually get along again. And Mike Lee has made this argument. As long as we're fighting over power and spoils in Washington, D.C., this tribalism gets worse and worse and inevitably leads to really bad stuff. But, you know, we don't believe that one person or one party should have that much power. And that's where diversity thrives, and that's where cooperation and tolerance become normal again. That's our vision.
Yeah, and I agree. The prospects of third-party options in any sort of capacity is rather exciting, regardless of what that option might look like, just because the ability to have more than just two choices is always going to be a positive thing. I also see the sort of momentum Obviously, you know that this is one of my bigger issues, but the momentum, you know, being pushed on criminal justice reform right now, I don't see stopping anytime soon. I see it escalating bigger and bigger, and that can only mean great things. And also the hesitancy, despite the fact that the, you know, you have all these powers that be, that is constantly pushing for more and more war. This is probably the first time, certainly in my lifetime, that I've seen them kind of on the defense a little bit. And you know, it's a powerful, you know, the warfare state's a very powerful thing to try to fight, regardless of who is fighting it. So that's always going to be sort of an uphill battle, but they really don't know what to do right now. And of course, everything going on with Iran is something to be of caution. But even with candidates like Tulsi Gabbard bringing that voice to the left and being the anti-war voice on the Democratic ticket is sort of wildly important, especially at this time, because now I don't think we've ever seen the neoconservatives really play defense in probably decades.
Yeah, they're sort of their tone is more hysterical and belligerent, and I think they're on the defensive. It still mystifies me why it is that Donald Trump, who arguably ran on a less interventionist platform, and seems to at least get the politics of the negative politics of never-ending war, you know, he's surrounded himself by neoconservatives, and we've done some videos on this. You know, everyone knows John Bolton, Mike Pence, and others. They're constantly itching to get into another war, and that's playing out right before our eyes, where Trump seems to be contradicting his own foreign policy team when it comes to the rush to get into war with Iran. And I hope he prevails, but I wonder why he decided to surround himself with such people, because people are policy. But that's one of those issues. I mean, Tulsi Gabbard and Justin Amash on this very fundamental issue of surveillance and war, the financial cost, the human cost, the chaos that is created by sort of that arrogance and pretense of knowledge when we get into nation building, particularly in places in the Middle East. I think there's a new consensus growing away from the two-party neoconservative monopoly, and that's something to be hopeful for. The fact that Trump led on criminal justice reform is fantastic. The fact that Kanye and Kim Kardashian were so influential in that argument, right. I think that's great. I think that's upstream of politics, and everybody acknowledges that we just dipped our toe in the water on dealing with mass incarceration. My team is actually in Boulder, Colorado this week, filming a new documentary on restorative justice, which is one of those sort of transpartisan issues where we deal with the fundamental question: why is it that criminals pay a debt to society instead of the victims that they've harmed? And restorative justice is an alternative process by which the convicted perpetrator agrees to a process that is intended to make the victim whole again. And I think that idea is very much based on libertarian principles, but it also gets to some very practical questions about recidivism and how we get people who have made a mistake, sometimes a horrible mistake, how do we get them integrated back into society once they've paid their debt, hopefully to the victim? And so issues like that do have some traction. And you know, whenever you see Van Jones working with Donald Trump and all of them taking heat for doing it, that tells me that something useful is happening.
Mm-hmm. So before we wind down here, second part to that question I asked earlier about your sort of optimism or whatever it may be within the realm of politics, what can you tell us about within your own organization, within Free the People, or your show on Kibbe on Liberty. What are some exciting things that you're looking forward to in the future? Is there anything that you can sort of give us a little peek behind the curtain, or anything exciting coming down the pipes here shortly?
Yeah, so the experiment in what we're doing, I'm super excited about it, and I think it has to stay upstream of politics, because once we choose teams in a political race, everybody sort of runs back to their camps, and some people just run away because they hate the whole process.
Right.
The trend that the stuff we're doing, like this documentary that we're producing that I just mentioned on restorative justice, is moving towards more long form mini documentary storytelling. We have two of our mini docs showing at the Anthem Film Festival coming up at Freedom Fest in Las Vegas in I think it's later July. And we're looking to build out channels. You know, we have a channel on Amazon Prime, we have a channel on Roku now, and we're looking for more neutral platforms to distribute that content to people that want to have a civilized and engaging and compelling conversation, as opposed to, you know, just clicking on confirmation clickbait that confirms your pre-existing biases. We're not in that game, and I think that game is short-lived.
Well, whenever Free the People starts running out with their craft beer that they start making, I'll be sure to be the first to get some of that as well. Matt, it's been a pleasure. Why don't you tell us where people can find you on social media, and where they can find any sort of information that they can get their hands on about what Free the People is doing next?
So Kibbe on Liberty, you can find that channel on YouTube. You can find Free the People and all of our documentary content on YouTube. FreethePeople.org is essentially its own channel where all of our content is organized based on subject and series, where you can sort of binge watch like it's sort of like Netflix for Liberty. And yes, we're still on social media. It's like a drug addiction that you just can't shake.
Right. All right. Well, thanks, Matt. I really appreciate your time, and we'll have you on again soon.
Cool. Thanks a lot.
Alrighty, that's going to do it for us for this week. Please, like I said, go out and be sure to subscribe to the Liberty Podcast on iTunes, so that way you'll never miss an episode or an update. Do me a favor also, please be sure to follow me at KibbeFrans on Twitter. Follow the show at Liberty on Twitter. Follow the organization at MilLibertyOrg on Twitter, and check us out on Facebook at the Mill Liberty Initiative. I almost said Mill Liberty Organization, which would not be correct. And again, please, please, please share, subscribe. It helps us out tremendously. I really hope you enjoyed our conversation with Matt. We will have more like those in the near future, and we will lay out sort of a full schedule in the coming days of what that might look like for the foreseeable future. So be on the lookout for that. And until next week, talk to you soon.